This sanctified episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by the lords and ladies of HTML over at squarespace.com. Head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Greetings, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, which is, according to George Clooney, America's top-rated podcast. You can listen to that interview on podcastamerica.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. You know, one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is I end up getting access to celebrities that normally I wouldn't even have a chance of crossing paths with. In this case, I was recently contacted by the manager of one of my favorite wise drunk singers, Fergus Blander. For those of you who have somehow missed the glory of Fergus Blanson, he is a late-stage alcoholic. He's had 3 liver transplants. His stomach looks like somebody shoved some satanic beach ball into it. He's bloated, ragged, run down. He wears old, broken, leathery shoes. He wears a hobo's cape, and he's got a hobo stick. He has a checkered bandana that he wears around his neck and some of the coolest fashion glasses you ever seen. And not only does he make some of the realest, hardcore, down-to-earth, super drunk, beautiful music you've ever heard in your life, but he is a fountain of wisdom. Many people have compared him to Khalil Gibran. Many people have compared him to Mahatma Gandhi. He has found the wisdom at the bottom of the bottle, and he's not afraid to let us all hear his advice and the truth he's discovered about life. And my God, he has really informed me in so many of my decisions, because if you're going to somebody for advice, the first person you should go to is the most unhealthy person who's been ripped apart and chemically burnt on the insides by a deadly poison. And that is Fergal Blanders. He came into the studio. I wasn't able to be there because, as most of you know, I'm in Egypt right now translating some scrolls we found in the taxidermied carcass of an old cat. But my assistant Clancy did a great job interviewing him, and I just can't even believe that such an incredible artist spent time in my podcast studio. Without further ado, here's a song and a brief interview with America's favorite poison, bitter, cynical, angry drunk, Fergal Blantry.
Before we get going, I just want to say, fucking fuck you to all you reproducing fucking baby, some fucking British shit babies out of your puss. This song was taught me by an old dead dog in a city street. That's a lie. This song was taught to me by a great friend of Kurt Kadindi. That's a lie too. They're all lies. They're all lies.
Mercury's in cunt today. Pregnant ladies on parade. Lost my blade on Bourbon Street next to the crow meat man. Don't you know it's Mother's Day? When I'm pissing in the alleyway, rich men eat their steak fillets, while on my heart she dines.
Yeah. You know, in the old days, you wouldn't even finish a song. Piano's drunk, you'd say. Don't feel bad. Oh, shit.
Wow.
I've been spraying bricks out my dick.
Fergus Blander, thank you so much for coming on and doing the show. We're huge fans.
What are you saying?
We're your biggest fans. We saw you at the Hollywood Bowl 3 times. And
give me that.
You're one of our teachers.
Is there any more salami?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Here's some salami right here.
Oh, dear.
You're welcome. Well, is there any advice you'd like to share with some of our, you know, listeners who are working on themselves?
That's the kind of question I need to hear from a dunce. Cracks. Concrete. Gray rain. Muskrat. Beaver. Running across the street.
Yes.
Struck by lightning.
Yes.
Saw it on a Greyhound bus. Head curled down. Next to it, there was nun and a clown.
Wow.
Pants are brown. But when I bought them, they were white. Now that's a lyric I just wrote.
You are amazing. Thank you so much for being here. That was Fergus Sanders.
I'm gonna throw up.
What an American genius. While all of us are out here living our normal mundane lives, he's out there on the road, drinking night and day and making beautiful music for all of us. Thank you so much, Fergus Mayfield. And thank you guys for listening to the DTFH. We got a great episode for you today with comedian Anthony Jeselnik. We're going to jump right into that. But first, some quick business. When the singularity happens and buzzing swarms of nanobots are flying through the streets of every city on this beautiful planet, do you know what criteria they're going to use to decide whether or not they should dissolve you into a bubbling pool of gelatinous plasmatic gel? I can tell you one thing they're going to use, and that's how good your website was, or if you even had a website at all. Do you really want to risk that? Do you really want to risk sitting in your backyard post-singularity and hearing that strange, warbling, buzzing sound like a 1,000 hummingbirds heading over the fence of your backyard and zooming to you to disassemble you at an atomic level and transform you into nothing more than a stinking pile of puddled flesh? No! It's time for you to create a beautiful website, and the best way to do that is to head over to Squarespace.com. Squarespace allows you to build an incredible website by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online. Everything's optimized for mobile right out of the box. They've got analytics that help you grow in real time, and built-in search engine optimization. Listen, friends, we don't know what criteria the artificial intelligence that is soon to rule our entire planet is going to use. Will you be a slave to the robots, or potentially will you become their friend? Don't risk being ripped apart by nanobots at the end of time. Head over to squarespace.com right now and make it yourself. Easily create a website by yourself. You don't need any help for this. You don't want to have to hire some trembling Adderall addict to build your website and set you on the path of your dreams. You can do it yourself. Just go to squarespace.com. The proof is in the pudding, pals. If you want to see a great Squarespace website, all you have to do is go to duncantrussell.com. That is a Squarespace website, and I guarantee you, when the pentagram-shaped swarms of nanobots come flying out of the Google laboratories, they're not going to tear my eyeballs out and transform me into some kind of fleshy pile of robot furniture. At the very least, they're going to let me be in their harem as one of their sex slaves, and that's because I have a beautiful Squarespace website. Head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/Duncan. Use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain name. It's time for you to ensure your safety when the great crack appears in the time-space continuum and every point in the future comes pouring out into the present. And the way to do that is to go to squarespace.com. My brothers and sisters, if you are annoyed by these ridiculous opening monologues, if you hate the commercials, if you're sick of everything that precedes the conversations we have on this website, I encourage you to head over to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. If you sign up there, you will get commercial-free, opening monologue-free episodes of the DTFH and lots of other weird stuff that I post there. There's also episodes that have yet to be released. As soon as I record an interview with someone, I upload it over at patreon.com. Thank you to all of those of you who have been signing up. We also have a bunch of t-shirts, posters, and stickers located at duncantrussell.com. Okay, without further ado, it is with great pleasure that I introduce today's guest. He is a brilliant comedian whose incredibly dark, absurdist comedy is some of the best stand-up out there right now. You can check out a couple of his specials, which are available on Netflix.com. He also had the incredible honor of roasting our wonderful president, Donald Trump. And he also had his own show on Comedy Central for a few seasons, The Jesselneck Offensive. He is on tour right now preparing for his next special. You should definitely go see him live. Okay, everybody, please allow whatever dark angels have been whispering in your ear to fly through the inverted rainbow that connects all of us to today's brilliant guest, comedian Anthony Jesselneck. Anthony, thank you so much for being on the show, man. You're in the middle of a tour and stopping by and giving me your time. It means a lot to me. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for appreciating it.
Cool. Yeah, of course. All right. I never do this with the podcast, but I want to start off with a little clip of some philosophy and I'd like your thoughts on it. Okay, here we go.
Behold the crucifix. What does it symbolize? Pallid incompetence hanging on a tree. I question all things. As I stand before the festering and varnished facades of your haughtiest moral dogmas, I write thereon in letters of blazing scorn. Lo and behold, all of this is fraud. No creed must be accepted upon authority of a divine nature. Religions must be put to the question. No moral dogma must be taken for granted. No standard of measurement deified. There is nothing inherently sacred about moral codes. Like the wooden idols of long ago, they are the work of human hands, and what man has made, man can destroy. The chief duty of every new age is to upraise new men to determine its liberties, to lead it toward material success, to rend the rusty padlocks and chains of dead custom that always prevent healthy expansion. Theories and ideas that may have meant life and hope and freedom for our ancestors may now mean destruction, slavery, and dishonor to us.
What are your thoughts on that?
With philosophy, I am, and I'm admitting something to you now, that I consider myself to be an intelligent person.
Yeah.
When it comes to philosophy, I almost feel like I'm getting directions from someone.
Right.
That you're like, I can pay attention to the first couple.
Yeah.
You're like, go take a left on this street and then take your next right. And then I'm like, okay, take a left, take a right. And then I got to ask someone else directions.
Yes.
That sure. I just like tune out at
yeah.
some point.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems to, like, what I just listened to, I took away from it. Basically, it was saying religion is, even if religion is helpful at a certain point, it can become harmful.
Yeah.
As society changes. I used to be a hardcore atheist. I was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
Hated it from the beginning. Was like, I don't believe this, and was forced into it.
Right.
That I was an atheist for a while. And then I heard a word that I was like, no, that's what I am, is an apatheist.
Whoa.
That you don't care if there's a God. Like, because you're like, you'll be like, I don't believe in God. They're like, well, you can't know for sure. You're agnostic. And it's like, right. I'm sick of this argument. Like, I'm going to act... I'm going to act the way I'm going to act,
right,
regardless of whether there's a God or not.
Right.
I just don't care.
That's cool.
If I die and there is a God and it's like all these things I've been told are true, I'll deal with it then.
Right.
But I'm like, and now having the discussion now, I'm just like, I don't care. But I, as a comic, you obviously hate hypocrisy. And I despise when religion argues from a place of privilege.
Mm.
Where they're like, well, we believe in God. So it's like, no. Like, imagine this, like, Jesus thing doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Now what? Like, start from scratch and prove this to me that you can't argue from a place of privilege. That's what that clip said to me.
That clip is from the Satanic Bible. That's Satanism. And I was watching your wonderful comedy special that you shot in San Francisco.
Mm.
And I thought, oh shit, is Anthony a Satanist? Because that's where of course, Anton LaVey, the Black House, sure, was. And I was, are you a Satanist?
I mean, I don't care enough to be a Satanist. Like, I once interviewed a Satanist on my old TV show. We would do like religions, and we did Satanism, and got this guy to come out and talk to us. And it just seemed like, I mean, I don't want to belittle them, but
wonderful people. I mean it. They're wonderful, sure, people.
And I hate, like, there's a lot of people who are like, I'm an atheist, you guys are dumb, and I hate that. I hate that. That's an atheist arguing from a place of privilege, like, and just being smug.
Right.
It reminds me of like Bill Maher in the beginning of that religious.
Yeah, right.
That,
sure,
movie he did.
Yeah.
Where, like, the first scene is like him going to like, and like arguing with like five guys in a trailer who like just got out of prison. Yeah. And he's like, come on, you guys. And like, why are you arguing with these people?
Yeah.
This is like, you're just bullying these people.
Yes.
That I don't, this is off-putting to me, and I agree with everything you say.
Right, man. Yeah, that's cool. You are an anti-bully person.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of heroic in that. You slam down the hammer on bullies.
Heroic for so many reasons.
I think you are. Can I tell you the reasons I think you're heroic?
Please, I would love to hear
this. Okay, great. So here's one of the reasons I think you're heroic. One of the things I love about art is that it takes some of the most horrific things and it like shines this beautiful light through it. And when that works, it's the most incredible thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching your special, man. I hadn't had a chance to watch it yet. I'm watching this absurdist, dark, well-crafted comedy. You're saying some of the darkest shit ever.
No, thank you.
But it feels like love is coming through it, through the words. And so somehow it's just working. Like, it doesn't feel, you know, like you get around somebody and they're trying to freak you out. They're trying to like say the thing that freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks because behind it's like this weird aggression or anger. But what's coming through your jokes, it feels like love. Is it love? Is it the love of your art or is it life or why?
I think it certainly, it comes from a place of positivity. It comes from a place of creation that you can call it love. I just think that the secret is that, like, the end goal can't just be the darkness. It has to be the light, which is the laughter. Like, it's got to be a great joke. Like, I got into this realm of dark comedy because it seemed like the highest possible bar with, like, the smallest possible safety net.
Wow.
That, like, let's just make this really hard on myself.
Yeah.
And then the jokes have to be great.
Yeah.
You know, they just, if I don't get like sympathy laughs. It's like, I either make you laugh despite yourself.
That's right.
Or I'm bombing.
That's right.
You know?
Well, you were in your special, you were you picked out a woman in the audience. You picked out a disabled woman in the audience.
She was laughing very, very loudly that I had to kind of deal with it.
Was it an accident? That was not a plant.
Oh, no. I love when people think that things are plants. Like, I would pay someone to just laugh really loud. Like, I'll take questions sometimes, and people are like, oh, you planted those people.
Yeah.
I have like a good comeback. And it's like, you think I paid someone to sit in the audience and ask me if I waxed my asshole? Like, this is like, people say the dumbest stuff. They're like, no, that was not a plant.
It seemed like a satanic miracle. It's just like, my Christ, in the midst of this dark comedy, he picks out a person and the first thing they say is, I'm disabled. But I was looking at their faces and they're so happy, man.
They were thrilled. Yeah.
They're thrilled. It's such a cool interaction because it's like, what's happening is brutal. I think you were saying that her husband electrocutes her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a disabled person. And in any other space, that could go so on the night of your special.
Sure. But I feel like at my shows, like I was in Salt Lake City and I think there's video of this, so I may be gone now. But I'm doing it in Salt Lake City, and I see a girl in the front row with an animal, with like a service dog, like either a golden retriever or something. And I'm like, why do you have a service dog? Like, you're not blind. And she's like, oh, it's an emotional support animal. And I'm like, normally this would be, you don't ask a follow-up question. Like, something clearly bad has happened. But I was like, if you're in the front row of my show, and this is like a couple of years ago, and you bring your dog, like, you know you're going to get talked to, and I'm going to ask you about, like, you're excited for this. And it was like, I was like, why do you have the service animal? And she was like, my ex-husband used to beat me and rape me so much that now, like, I need this dog. And I was like, I'm going to have the best time right now. Like, I was just like, you know, there are easier ways to get a dog. You know, and I'm like, is this your new boyfriend? Like, this guy's got a low bar. Like, this guy must be like cock of the walk. And just like, the crowd is going nuts. They're laughing. And I'm like, only at my show could this happen.
Right.
You know, Brian Regan can't do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's freeing.
It's alchemy. It's some kind of alchemy, man. Because I don't really... I've seen like a certain type of, I love dark stuff, dark things, horror movies, but when you see dark comedy that doesn't work,
nothing worse. People who want to come and tell me a joke after show, I'm like, please don't. Like, and I don't, they'll be like, oh, you'll like this, it's dark. And I like dark things, like horror films. Like, I think of myself as a horror film now. I used to think of myself as a kind of a musician, and like, I'm making music, my jokes are music. But then I realized that was wrong, that like, I'm much more of a horror film where like, yeah, these things are fucked up. But if you know, if you buy a ticket to a horror film, you come for the scares. You come for, to feel something. To feel like, to feel horrible and then feel good again.
That's it.
That really helped me to relax on stage. To be like, oh, this is, like I used to, I don't know if I'm getting off on a tangent. I used to like, I would take out jokes sometimes. Like I would be at the Comedy Cellar in New York and I was like, oh, I'm on the 7 o'clock show. I can't open with this joke. And Jim Norton once pulled me aside and was like, hey, you're a movie. Like, just play the movie. If you see a movie at 7 o'clock or at midnight, it's the same movie. That's like, don't change for people. And I was like, yes. Like, I love that advice. That's perfect.
That's really good, man. And, you know, once I got to see, I don't know, what do you think of Carlin? What do you think of George Carlin?
I liked him, appreciated him, but wasn't like a Carlin head.
Right. You know,
like, don't go back and listen to old albums. It's like a lot of complaining.
Yeah.
Which is what I despise. Like, I can't watch. I lose respect for you if you're just up there whining.
Yeah, sure.
And it seemed like he was always doing that. Yeah. So I have respect for him, but I'm not like, I'll remember this bit. Like,
I figured that's what, that was your thoughts on him. And Alan's like a big Carlin head, but I got to see him in the... He would come to work on his HBO specials in the main room of the Comedy Store, and I got to see him live. And I realized as I was watching him that he it's like what you're saying. What he was doing was very dark, and it was sad because it's like, okay, it's like when I went to see Devo. I'm like, dude, they're old now, and Devo's going to fucking suck now, and it's going to be really depressing, but they were great. Mm-hmm. I went to see Carlin, and it was the same feeling, like, man, I hope he's like still like, still what he was in the past. He opens up with the cheesiest fucking, I don't remember what it was, some shit stock joke, man. It was like really bad, like doddering. It was like, oh God, you know, is he not funny anymore? He's like senile or something. But then, like two jokes in, he's talking about his dying wife's cancer screams. And Anthony, the difference between what he was doing and what you're doing is what he was doing, I wouldn't call it comedy. It was something else. It was some kind of like, necromancy, some kind of like sadistic, but it was working because he's very charismatic. And sure. It's just like what you're talking about. It's like he did this artful thing of like very slowly pulling the rug out from under the audience. And then like 30 minutes in, you are in a horror movie. You've been captured by a wizard. You're being assaulted. You're being like really, really, really offended, which I love to get offended.
Oh yeah. I want to be shaken. I want to be like, like I want art to make me feel something.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't care what it is, but make me feel something. It's so tough to do.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the story of Carlin's, he shot a special that never got released called I Kinda Like It When a Lot of People Die?
No.
George Carlin recorded a special where the final bit, the closer, the special's called I Kinda Like It When a Lot of People Die, and the closer is like a 20-minute, like, rant about how he likes it when a lot of people die. When he hears like a news story where a lot of people die, like the more the better. I love reading about it. I think it's great. And he's talking about like, he's referencing these like giant like earthquakes and shit that are happening around the world and different stuff. He recorded this, I'm not joking, He recorded this on September 10th, 2001.
Oh, wow.
The day before 9/11. Wow. And then it was like freaked out and was like, we can't release this. We can't save any of this special. Like, this can never see the light of day. And a couple years ago, they released like the audio.
See, man, that's where I get nervous. And man, I know, I bet we have a humongous disagreement here, but this is where I get nervous. Is sometimes I think, like, when you have a big platform and you're blasting out those dark rays, which you're doing, but they're funny, so maybe they're not dark, you know? Maybe it's like pure light and like we're the idiots to think that it's dark. But I get superstitious and I get like, you know, I'm a woo-woo-y person. So when I hear that, I think, fuck, maybe Carlin was part of that. Maybe he was part of the cascade that led to that horrible thing happening, you know?
I don't believe in karma at all for one reason and one reason only.
Why?
Mr. Rogers died from stomach cancer. Mr. fucking Rogers died of stomach cancer. Right. Like one of the worst ways to go that like, yeah. There's no, don't tell me that guy deserved that. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, and he was the greatest, like, you want to talk about love and like putting out positivity out there. Amazing. Like there's no one.
Pure.
Yeah.
He was pure.
He was pure.
Yeah.
I grew up in Pittsburgh where like he taped that show. So to me, like he was Hollywood to me. Like as a kid, you don't understand. Whoa. You're just like, oh yeah, he lives down the street. Like he's.
Did you see him live?
No, I mean, you would see him, we would see, like, my parents took us, all the kids, to go see, like, some fucking musical somewhere, and we're like, that's Fred Rogers. Like, he's walking down the aisle, like, he's at the show just with us.
That is so wild to consider that baby Jeselnik crossed paths with Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
That is wild,
you would,
man,
see him all the time.
Well, so, okay, so the karma thing is like, you know, it's based on the concept of reincarnation. So we're dealing with like a much bigger time scale than that. It's not like you do a bad thing and then this bad thing happens to you. That's not really how it works. It's more based on like, well, it's on a huge time frame that you're, what's the word?
Apatheist.
You're an apatheist. So you really probably don't care, which actually puts you very in line with Buddhism because, you know, they would ask Buddha, what happens when you die? And he would say, what difference does it make? You're not dead. You're here right now in this moment. What are you thinking about that for? It has nothing to do with it. But the idea of karma is more along the lines of like big time frames, you know? And it's not like someone gets stomach cancer. If you believe in the kind of karma where someone who has stomach cancer must have done something rotten, then it's like, I don't know if that's exactly
I don't think that people with stomach cancer deserved it, but just that you would think that there would be some sort of reward. Something nice would happen to Fred Rogers for doing what he did.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, that maybe that was the best fucking thing to happen to him. Like, maybe he was going to slide out of control later in his life. Maybe Fred Rogers is going to get some kind of, like, horrible fucking neuro... Like, that fucking brain tumor that got the guy up in the tower? Can you imagine that? You know, the shooter, the college shooter, he went up in a fucking tower with a gun.
Like the one in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And that guy left a note saying, I think I have a brain tumor. And then they operated and he had a fucking brain tumor. Wow. Like, Fred Rogers could have gotten a brain tumor.
It's possible.
Climbed up in a tower, started blasting toddlers.
I mean, dying early is certainly a great career move in a lot of ways, that you become more than you were.
More than you were, yeah. And you know, Fred Rogers, we're talking like backstage, we don't know. No offense, this is like, I'm with Anthony Jeselnik, I'm allowed to blaspheme. We don't know what he was like backstage.
Yeah, people do. There's been a book written about him. There's a movie coming out about him that, like, you've never heard a bad word about the guy. Everyone talks about him like he is and was a saint. I don't know if they've even talked about canonizing him. I don't know if he probably
canonizing Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, I would be all for it.
I would be all for it too. But man, I just can't imagine, like, you know, the Jungian shadow, the darkness inside of everyone, the gnashing demonic teeth, the reality we're all being dissolved by time. Come on, Fred Rogers. He did something, man.
I think he figured out, like, the way through that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I saw a movie recently. Like, obviously you get into comedy because there's an anger there.
Yes.
You know, whatever it is, there's, like, you might not be damaged, but you're definitely, there's an anger there.
Yeah.
And I was watching a movie called Wind River, I think. And they're like talking about this guy's like going out of his mind because his daughter died. He's acting badly. He's like, he's like, I'm just so angry, I want to fight the world. And he was like, I used to want to fight the world. The other guy says, I used to want to fight the world. Now I fight that feeling.
Wow.
And it was like, yeah, like you can take your aggression, you can take your like anger, but use it to make yourself positive. You can literally fight that feeling of wanting to fight.
Yeah.
And that just like blew my mind. Like in the theater, I was like, oh, I love this movie just for that line of dialogue.
That's beautiful, man.
I've recommended it to me, like, I hated that movie. They're in fucking Alaska. And I'm like, I just like that line. Like that was a great line.
Yeah.
You can be positive and still be a badass. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But be like doing good in the world.
I love that, man. People forget that too. Like that, the whole idea of positive, like what a positive person looks like, is such a demonic idea. Like that, like a person who's like doing yoga and is like, hi.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, I fucking hate that, man. That's really annoying.
Absolutely. It's like someone who quits drug, gives up drugs, and then becomes like an anti-drug crusader. Like they're like,
yeah.
It's that sort of like, just lay off me. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know you mean well, but you're fucking this up. That sort of, the new agey thing you described is, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It's like some great graphic novel on now. I can't remember the name. It's like a velvet glove cast in iron or something, but it's the idea of like, someone's like punching you. Like, it's like someone's taken their aggression and they have clothed it in this kind of like weird new agey yoga thing. And they're just beating you over the fucking head with it. And they're assaulting you basically, which is kind of like, feels like what the opposite of what you're doing, which is that you've taken this beautiful, like powerful, I don't know, passionate, fucking vital force and clothed it in like really dark shit. And that's why it works. I guess that's why it works.
Yeah. Thank you. When I kind of discovered this, like, you know, when you go on stage in the beginning, you're just like trying to find any laugh wherever you can. You know what I mean? Like, I would be like an acrobat comic if they laughed at me fucking rolling around on the floor. Like, you would have just done that. Then when I was like, clicked on this and it started to work, and I was like, oh, this is organic and it works and it's difficult, but I understand why and I can defend it.
Wow.
You know, like I can always defend it in a way that makes it just how you look at it. It can be either positive or like, you're awful for joking about these things. Like, no, I'm not. I'm like maybe the greatest person of all time for joking about these things. Like,
yeah,
like, just that this is a positive thing. Like, we're laughing at these things. How is that negative? How am I a jerk? Like, I make people laugh for a living. And it might be these terrible things, but that's like, this is what makes it fun.
You love yourself.
I have to work to love myself. Yes.
The Jeselnik, I'm sorry to cut you off. The Jeselnik confidence, man. Like I'll tell you one of my favorite things that happened at the Comedy Store. And one of the big lessons in comedy I got was from Paul Mooney. He walks off stage. Man, he just annihilated. And he walks off stage. He's wearing that like safari outfit. You know, he's like that thing that he walks off stage. And I say, Paul, that was just amazing. And he goes, it was wonderful, wasn't it? It was just wonderful. I love that so much because it's like, hey, I agree with you. Yeah. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Instead of the thing like I have done where people are like, that was great. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. You know, I need to kind of worry.
Sure.
That sucks. So that seems like you love yourself. I don't mean it in a like you have hubris. I mean like in a healthy way.
Yeah. I understand what you meant by that. I love... Yeah, when I did the roast of Donald Trump, like, the confidence that I have on stage started out as fake confidence.
Okay.
Like, you just pretend. People are like, how do I get? And they're like, you fake it. Like, you just fake it. And once I just realized that, like, everyone's kind of nervous and has anxiety, that you're like, oh, I'm just going to fake this. Now it's real. Now it's like, I've done, like, I'm, you know, touring my fourth hour right now. That I'm like,
Jesus.
Oh, I can, like, this is amazing. Like, now the confidence is real because I've just done it over and over again. But I remember doing the Trump roast. It was, like, my big break. And comics in New York would make fun of me so much. Like, in a fun way. They would be like, Anthony, like, great job on the Trump roast. And I would go, I know. Did you guys see the thing where... And, like, they were like, it's just so funny to... When someone gives you a compliment, to be like, I know, and excited.
Yes.
Like, yeah, but I really felt... Like, there are certain things I do that are, or certain jokes that are perfect. If you were like, oh, your last hour is like the greatest special of all time, I'm like, I don't believe you. But if you're like, that joke was great.
Right.
I believe it.
Yeah.
You know the difference between confidence and arrogance?
What?
Confidence is a whisper. Arrogance is a scream.
Oh, wow.
You know, you've got to like yell out, you're the greatest. I'm the greatest. That's arrogance. But feeling, I'm the fucking best, man. Did you see that? Like, that is confidence.
Yeah.
And it's
good for the world.
Great to have. Yeah.
We need that shit.
More people should be more confident.
I agree, man. The skulkers, you know, like skulking, self-hating people, it's a plague that's everywhere. Like, people think you're not supposed to like yourself. But some people aren't really working as hard as you do, man. What does a work day look like for you when you're getting ready for a special, like when you're preparing the new hour?
I mean, when I'm writing the new hour, it's like it's almost like evolves. It's like it's right now I've kind of knocked it down to a three-year process, I think, where like for a year I'm writing. Like, every day I just write. And I start from zero. Because if I have any of the old stuff...
Wait, I'm sorry. You said a three-year process?
Yeah.
Per special?
Yeah.
And so every special we see, that's 3 years of your life work put into it.
I mean, just about, yeah. I would say that's fair. Maybe three or four. I mean,
wow.
The first one takes forever.
That is fucking serious, man.
But it's like a year of just writing. And then by the end of that year, I hope I have 40 minutes. And then I go to comedy clubs for a year.
Wait, you're writing minus the comedy clubs?
I'm writing and doing like the store and staying in LA
I see.
And then go to comedy clubs and tour where I'm like through Saturday.
Gotcha.
Two shows a night. And then I'm in the third year now where it's like now a year of theaters as like, because I think a theater is like a celebration of your act. Whereas a club, you're like there to work and get better. Now it's like, this is locked.
Right.
Come watch this.
Right.
And then tape the special in November and then... start again.
Wow. That's a novel. That's like writing a novel.
That's how I try to think about it. It's like, because they're like, now it's like, oh, do a 15-minute special, do a half hour. It's like, no. They're like, more people will watch if it's a half hour. I'm like, I don't care. The hour is important to me. Like, the audio is important to me that it exists, even though Netflix will be like, we don't want anyone else to be able to listen to it in any other way but like the special. And I'm like, no, because in 20 years, I want some kid to be able to buy the box set of the complete works of Anthony Jeselnik. That hour means a lot.
Yeah, well, you could tell, man, that the math is perfect in those jokes. It's like it's mathematically perfect jokes. It's really, really inspiring. But as I was watching, I was thinking, like, you're not really, I don't know, you're not a biographical comic, right? Like,
no, it's the opposite.
The opposite. Yeah, I was going through interviews of you, and it's like you seem to have this private life. You seem to have like there's a veil between Anthony Jeselnik, the comedian, and Anthony Jeselnik, the person. Or maybe I just didn't find the right interviews.
No, I think that I just don't like find it that interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't talk about politics on stage ever. Like, I think that's like the lamest shit to do.
Yes.
But like, I'm happy to tell you who I voted for. You know, like,
people just
don't end up in that conversation. Like, I just don't think I'm that interesting that I want to go on stage and like talk about my life. You know?
I love it, man. I love absurdity. And I think that this is a trap a lot of comics get stuck in, is they start thinking that the only thing they can talk about on stage is something that actually happened to them, that they can't fabricate stories. And it seems like that's pretty much what you're doing. It's just it's fiction mostly, right?
No, 100%. I mean, it's like I kill my parents and resurrect them every new hour. Do you know what I mean? Like, they will die. Like, throughout the course of the hour, like, one of them will die. The other one is like guilty of killing. And then the next one, they're like, they're back together and I get to start from scratch. But it was like the way that I couldn't talk about these horrible things if I was like actually like throwing family members under the bus.
Right.
People who were just like, my mom is the fucking worst. And I'm like, why are you telling these people? You know what I mean? Like, why are you being mean to your mother on stage? Like, it's off-putting to me.
Right. It's fucked.
Yeah.
Dude, I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about that joke about your brother jerking off. And I was trying to think of the wording of the joke. Like, I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm like, wait, what is the wording of the joke? Because I couldn't even... Having seen it, I couldn't even do it right. Well, how does that joke go again? It's like, I walked in. I saw my brother was jerking off. He said, close the door.
It was like, oh, yeah. My brother's like the worst. I forget. I mean, I honestly try to forget.
Wow.
Like, have you ever heard that it's, like, bad to remember your dreams?
No.
Like, that it, like, it's your mind getting rid of something that you need. If you, like, write down, if you do a dream journal.
Yeah.
You're, like, losing the benefit of dreams. Like, it's, like, it exhausts your mind. Like,
shit.
You're more tired if you do. You should just let your brain just do its thing.
Right.
And move on. That I feel, almost feel like with a special, like, I need to forget those jokes.
You expunge those jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, so this 3-year process, do you feel weird that you're doing the same jokes for 3 years? Does that start?
No. Like, I love them. And then I'll eventually get tired of them. You know, you almost try to tape the special when, like, you think about the money you'll make, you know, from touring. You want to make as much as you can. Because then the special's, like, the material's all dead. You can never make money with it again once the special comes out.
Right.
Make as much as you can, and then
because
it's like an investment,
right?
What the fuck was I even about to say?
I don't know.
I just lost my thought.
Person versus persona, man, and like sort of like the sometimes I wonder with you, I was wondering, do you ever feel trapped by this persona? Like, I was thinking, like, man, you know, David Bowie, he fucking reinvents himself all the time, and I was wondering, do you ever think, like, whoa? Comedically, there's an opportunity here to go deeper into the absurdity by doing a full reinvention of the persona. Do you ever think about
it? Oh, constantly. Constantly. But it'll come through my writing. That, like, I love this hour. I don't get sick of the jokes. I know I'm going to tape the special and walk off stage. And I assume, like, I'm just going to, let's see how I feel. Let's see what I want to do. You know, as you get further in your career, you have more freedom. I can wait for a year for something to strike me. But what I want to do usually is I walk off stage and I'm like, I want to get to work right now on the next hour. Like, it's a compulsion that I'm happy to have. I'm glad I have an interest in something I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And when I start to write, I'm like, maybe this is the one where I get personal. If I think of the way to do it, but I've got to find the way
right
in. Yes. And I'd be happy to get personal on stage, but it'd have to be interesting to me. Like, you talked about, like, hack comics earlier. Like, I think a hack is something, like, a great comic is someone who, talks about what they think is funny and convinces the audience. Hack comics are comedians who tell the audience what they think the audience will think is funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, here's what I think is funny. Let me convince you. And if you can, then you're a great comic. But if you're like, they're going to laugh at this. You're like, that's hack.
What if you can't, but you try? You know what I mean? Like, you're still that's still good. Isn't it better to go on stage with some idea of what you think is funny? I mean, you really think it's funny. Not like you wish it were funny, but you really think it's funny. And it eats shit. Isn't that way better than going on stage and saying what you know is going to work?
It depends. You know, it really, like, if I was better for me to watch personally, like, I'm almost at the point now where, like, this is so cheesy because I fought against this, but it was like, look like you're having fun. Like, if you're like confidently and like,
right,
and happily going through your set, then I can sit and watch you. But if you're like uncomfortable and you're trying to do something and it's not working and you're like, then I'm just watching an uncomfortable person.
Yes.
And like any other audience member, I want them gone.
Yes.
You know, like,
that's it.
Try to be weird and try to be different, but make it work.
Right.
The machine has to work.
Right.
You know, and some people just don't put that much effort.
That's what it is. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, like, how the fuck do I interview Anthony Jeselnik, man? You've been interviewed bunches of times by really great interviewers. And talked about comedy and stuff. I thought, man, you are an English major, and you read all the time. You're like a bookworm. It seems like you're always reading. So I thought, fuck, maybe I can get him to read a poem I really like that reminds me of him. Sure. Will you read this?
I will. Let's see how long it is first.
Get sure.
Okay. The Tiger by William Blake. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What a mortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet? What the hammer? What the chain and what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil? What dread grasp? Dare its deadly terrors clasp? And when the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his works to see? His work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry?
Cool, man. That sounded great. You got a great poetry voice.
Thank you.
Holy shit. Yeah, man. You think this is just, you know, I know, again, you said you're an, I'm sorry, I can't remember. What a terrible interview. An apatheist?
Apatheist. But, I assume it's a real word. I read it online somewhere that I was like, oh, this seems like a thing, but I've had to explain to people every time I've said it. That, like, it sounds like you just changed the word yourself.
You just don't care. But then I was when you were saying that, I was thinking, well, there would be reasons to care. And I don't mean reasons to care in the sense of, like, damnation for not caring, which is what happens to a lot of Catholics. They think that's like it creates a natural resistance because mm-hmm. there's this terrible threat. It's the worst kind of threat. It's ridiculous.
It's like you're damning your family and everyone you love to hell if you don't believe in God. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just you. It's not about you. It's like everyone you know.
Yeah.
When someone's like, I didn't believe in God, then my dad died, and then I was like, well, I want him to be some. I want to believe he's somewhere. So then I started to believe, and it's like, no, you're selling yourself out. You know what I mean?
Well, no, it's like kind of like, well, the fundamentalist Christian literalist interpretation is this being is gone. He's coming back. If you're not in some certain spiritual level by the time he comes back, you're going to hell, which is this is the identical trick bank robbers use. Like, you rob a bank and you're like, hey, everyone on the floor, I'm going to walk back in 2 minutes. And anyone who's mm-hmm. moved, I'm going to blow their fucking brains out. Yeah. It's a voodoo-y trick. But as someone who studied literature and seems to read deeply, you don't interpret Christianity in a literal way. Like, surely you can see that there's, like, usefulness in it minus the reality of there being a Christ or a God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I don't want to, like, denigrate. If it helps someone, you know, if someone's like, oh, I'm doing meditation, I'm like, great. You know, like, I'm glad that works for you. I feel like I've been taking placebo pills and it's changed my life. Like, fantastic.
Right.
Have as many as you want. You know, yeah. Like, but just leave me out of it.
Right.
I'm not going to be a jerk about these beliefs, but don't come to me and, like, try to argue with me. Like, don't talk to me from a place of privilege. Don't talk down to me because I'm not a part of this.
Right. But like, have you ever taken a psychedelic?
Yeah.
Which psychedelics have you taken?
I've taken acid and mushrooms.
Acid a lot, or
there was like I was on Martha's Vineyard for summer working, and it was just like there was like a 2 week period where like every other night you would like take a hit of acid and yes. we'd all go jump off bridges and shit, and like it was never like super crazy, but it was so much fun. And I've done mushrooms a few times.
Which do you like better, acid or mushrooms?
Maybe just because I was doing it when I was like 20 years old, but the acid was more fun and more, it was like energy, like it was just like. It was more than just a mushroom trip. And I've enjoyed mushrooms, but I've had some bad experiences on mushrooms too.
Like what?
I did it was like right when I moved out to LA, I basically like moved in with a fraternity. Like I was like, I was living in a house where it was like all these
crack guys. Kreischer's fraternity, right? He was in the same, Bert Kreischer, I think, was in the same, for what is it? Phi Kappa Tau? What's your
name? No, I was in ATO at Tulane.
Oh, ATO, yeah.
But I was like not involved. Like I pledged and then was like, this is the fucking dumbest shit ever. And like it wasn't around. I wasn't like a rah-rah fraternity.
Right.
But when I moved out to LA after New Orleans, well, I went to college in New Orleans, moved out here, I was basically like, my one friend out here was in a fraternity still. So we went on like some date party to like Lake Tahoe. It was like staying in some casino. And me and my friends didn't have dates. We were just there with them.
Yeah.
We're like, how did we end up here? So we're like drinking all day. We haven't like eaten anything. They're all going to the dinner like with their dates. And we're like, all right, let's get some weed and like smoke a little bit, eat something. And then they'll come back and we'll rally. And the guy's like, the dealer out there is like, oh, I don't have weed, but I've got mushrooms.
Oh, shit.
And we were just like, well, how much? He's like, 20 an eighth. So we're like, okay. So instead of splitting it, we're like, let's each get an eighth. And then I'm like walking to get water somewhere, and I look down and the bag is gone. I've eaten the entire bag.
Oh, man.
And I had a great time that night, but afterwards, I was clinically depressed for months.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That seems way out of character for you. Did you get depressed? Do you have depression?
I get depressed less, but I have done it in a way where I'm like, enjoying the experience. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone gets down.
Yeah.
Where it's like you feel a little blue. Like, I've written some of my best jokes when I've been like, you're really like too depressed to sleep kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's rare, but when it happens, I'm like, okay, let's just go with this. Let's like experience this and deal with it. And I said the words clinical depression. I don't know if it was, I never got treatment, but I didn't feel right for a long time that I was like hesitant. So right. If I'm going to do mushrooms, I'm like, okay, but tell me the situation. And how much are we going to do? Like, I'll do that.
Yeah. Mushrooms, casino, that kind, that's...
But at the time, it was great.
It's great.
It was just too intense. It was like, I think an eighth on an empty stomach was the problem. It wasn't the casino. It was like whatever that did to me. When I came down, I was just like fried.
Dude, I love what you were saying about enjoying depression. And mm-hmm. This is like one of my teachers, Ram Dass, one of the things he talks about is like, there's two ways you could look at your depression. One of them, I'm so depressed. I don't want to live. And the other one is like, wow, this is a serious depression.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't think I'm ever going to get out of this one, man. And yeah. It's like that, the moment you make that shift, suddenly it's manageable, you know? It's just an experience that you're having.
Exactly.
And sometimes when I run into like former atheists or...
I don't know what your audience is for this podcast. I just want to say, like,
it's a Christian.
Neither one of us is like belittling depression. You know, like, there are people who have it way worse. Like,
oh, yeah.
I have experienced the blues, yeah. And I can enjoy that. But I've never had like. I understand that there are people who like want to kill themselves every waking moment, and I have empathy for those people.
I get that kind of depression. They know it. I can yap about it because I've had that a few times in my life. I get the like shit your pants in bed, don't want to move. It's only happened a few times, but it does happen, and it's the worst fucking thing ever, man. It's the worst thing ever. They know that though. Yeah, I'm not belittling depression at all. It's just, it's nice to. Know people are listening and then like, well, you know, there are things. I actually did intramuscular ketamine for depression. You ever heard of that treatment for depression?
No.
Holy shit, man. This is the most insane thing. They're calling it one of the great psychiatric breakthroughs, which is they figured out that if you inject someone with ketamine, which is a disassociative anesthetic, that it treats the depression within like 45 minutes. So as opposed to SSRIs where it's like a month, it's like you start walking away and you're just like, it's lifted a little bit, which is pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
You should try ketamine. It's pretty incredible. You ever tried it?
No.
It's so fucked up, man, because it kills you. It annihilates you. It obliterates you. It's very, very hallucinatory when you do it at a high dose. So it just kills you. You're forced to deal with your own mortality. You'll become like cremation ash, you know, just nothing there. You're just ash. That's it. You're just dead. But are you afraid of death?
No.
Not at all.
I used to be like, my personal philosophy is just something that I've come through from like thinking about death a lot. You know, like when I was like younger, I would get depressed. I would think about death quite a bit. And then like one day I just thought, you know what, just pretend you're immortal. You know, you're so worried about this life. Like, what if you were like an immortal and you didn't have to worry about death ever? You were just like, just enjoy. All you really have is the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and then that made sense to me. It was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, just pretend you're going to live forever and you'll die. But stop worrying about it.
That's
like,
beautiful.
I really don't have any problem with it. The one time that I will like, I'll be scared to like, I don't know if this makes sense to you. Like, if I'm doing a gig, if I'm flying to the gig, I'm like, if this plane crashed, I'd be cool with it. If I'm flying home, I'm like, fucking plane better not crash. Like, I'm going, like, I mean, like, at least I don't have to do the show. But if I'm coming home, I'd be like, motherfucker.
That's a true comic, man. I'm glad you admit it. It's not as though, like, as you're flying to the show, you're like, oh, shit, man. Yes, yes, yes. There is a piece of you that's like, fuck, yeah, I'll just be incinerated. I mean, at least I won't have to go up for two times a night. Wow, yeah, I know, exactly.
And, but like with my hour, like I would be very upset to be dying now. Like, I got to record this hour, and then I'll be at peace. I'll be like, if I died tomorrow, at least this is still there, that I haven't wasted my time. Like, that would be my fear. Like,
right.
A wasted life is terrifying to me, you know, or a bitter life. But death, no.
Are you a workaholic?
No. No. This is like the only thing in my life that I've really worked at. You know, like I was always the kid in school who would drive people crazy because like, you're smart, but you're clearly not trying at all. And if you just applied yourself, and I just couldn't do it. I like to read and that was about it. But this is like the only thing I've really worked at.
How old are you?
39.
39. Mm-hmm. And have you ever had in your life a major heartbreak? You ever gotten your heart crushed by anybody? Or anything?
I mean, I've certainly been embarrassed. I've been sad. I don't know if I've ever had my heart like crushed, but I've gone through heartbreak for sure. Like I've gone through breakups. And even if it's like, even if you're the one doing the breaking up, it's still, you know, it's still tough. But yeah, I've had bad things happen.
You're usually the guy doing the breaking up.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. I've been dumped, but usually it's me or it comes from me.
What's your technique? Do you have a tactic?
Now I'm just very blunt and honest. You know, I found that like, cause I used to be, I had a relationship that ended where I was like, I'm just going to cheat until they find out and then they'll break up with me. And it was like, once that happened, I was like, I knew what I was doing. This was like pure cowardice. I've someone that I loved, I've like really fucked them over. Like I just felt like such a piece of garbage that I was like, I'll never do this again.
Right.
You know, I'll never just like let things go because I don't want to confront them. And then the other person pays for it. It's like the person who like cheats on their spouse and then tells them because they feel guilty. It's like, you just like, you were awful to them by telling them.
I disagree with that. I'll tell you why. I disagree with that. And I know that theory. And I think it's on one level, it's logically sound. But it's like, that's the concept that like secrets don't carry weight. Like secrets are heavy things, man. You know, like when you're keeping something from someone that you really love or you're with all the time, it's not as though the secret isn't bouncing around inside of you. It's like there. It's like a free radical. The things they say cause cancer. It's just zinging around inside of you, you know? So no, I disagree. I've heard that before. And in fact, that's one of the ways you can tell someone's cheating on you is if you hear them say something like that. Like, you know, it's better not to tell someone that you're cheating on them. You're like, oh, you're cheating on me. You just told me.
Yeah.
You know, but secrets hurt.
Well, as someone who's like helped people cheat, you know what I mean? Like hooked up with people who were, you know, in a relationship. I found that the way you find out if someone's cheating on you is if they accuse you of cheating on them. Like yes. It's like those people are, it's like the anti-gay congressman is always the guy who they catch in the bathroom.
That's, you know, like, right, man.
It's always like the person who protests too much.
Always. Jealousy is one of the big signs, man. I mean, I've done, do you monogamy? Are you polyamorous now? What's your thing?
I mean, I like the, like monogamy is comfortable for me. It works for me that if I'm going to be with someone at all, I'm not like a hookup guy. I'm like, if I'm going to be with someone at all, let's follow it out. Like that's interesting to me that I'm like, I don't want to have to find a new partner every night. You know, that's not pleasurable to me. But I don't know if I would call myself polyamorous. Like I just kind of do whatever I want. Like someone made me laugh. They're like, I was like, yeah, if you can get me hard, you can fuck me. You know, and they were like, that's such a funny like way to say it. But it was like, yeah, it's pretty true.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I mean I've been monogamous. I'm trying out polyamory now, and it's an ego devastator, you know, because like you have to deal with like not being the only person hooking up with someone that you're in love with. So that's a little bit of an ego devastator. But what I love is that
what draws you to it is like, let's see, like I'm gonna test myself and see, because sometimes you know you don't know if you're gonna get jealous until you see your ex with some, you know what I mean? You don't know what's gonna happen. Your friend tells you good news. You're like, maybe I'll get jealous when I hear this. Yeah. I don't know until they tell me. Is that part of the draw of like a threesome?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's kind of like what the draw is for me is just pragmatism, man. It's just like I tried monogamy for like, you know, 43 years and I get jealous or they get jealous and it gets boring. You know, like when you're sitting across from somebody and you're doing the monogamy thing, you're like, we're only going to be with each other for the rest of our lives. And it's like, whoa. What a coffin we've nailed ourselves into here, haven't we? Like, what a madness that must be to think that I'm gonna try to keep you from like fucking somebody.
Yeah, but I think of a relationship as like it's like getting a puppy, kind of like it's like getting a dog. You know, you're gonna have this dog, and I want that puppy time.
Yes.
You know, I want, if I'm going to get in a relationship at all, I want to be that, like, where you're fucking head over heels and just like super excited. And then that, you know, it's going to fade and it's going to, and then it's going to be the work part of it.
Yeah.
That sometimes, you know, I've been successful and I've failed at. But it's, I've just kind of lost interest in, I maybe not lost interest. After I had a breakup where I was like, I'm going to learn to be alone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, first it's like, I mean, I would feel weird going to some movie by myself.
Yeah.
Much less like eating by myself or like running. And now like it's my favorite. Like, I go on vacations by myself.
That's so cool.
Like I'm so happy. And I've tried to get in a relationship since and just been like,
no,
I want this person the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're free. You're like a free spirit, an autonomous free spirit. Do you read Camus much?
No.
You get into existentialism much?
No.
Wow. I love listening to you talk. I love your philosophies, man. It's really cool because my favorite thing is like, you know, Joe will like start spitting out some his personal philosophy and stuff. And like, I study Buddhism and I'm theistic. I study all this stuff. And it's really cool to hear you saying things. It's like, oh, wow, man, you know, you're describing Buddhism. Like that thing that you said about the, well, now some Buddhists will get mad because there's like any other religion. There's a million versions of it, you know, but that thing you're saying, oh, I'm going to pretend to live forever, you know? So the only difference is that concept is, well, actually you are infinite. Like you are an infinite consciousness that's having this person, this very temporary experience of being a person. So my teachers would be like, oh yeah, you're tuned in to exactly the thing. The only difference is you're using the word pretend, whereas they're like, no, actually that's how it is. That's the nature of reality, is that consciousness isn't embodied. What do you think about that? You think consciousness is based on human neurology?
I don't know if there's a difference whether it's based on it or not. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the question doesn't trouble me.
Right.
You know, for sure. But I found that you're talking about like having a personal philosophy that ends up just being like Buddhism. It's like stand-up comedy where I could go and be like, yeah, no, if you like, this one joke's not working. What if you like do this? It's like, no. You've got to figure it out on your own. You've got to be on stage and have it fail enough times that you find it yourself.
Right.
That it's like that. Like you couldn't have just explained Buddhism to me and I'd be like, okay, like that wouldn't have made any sense to me. Like I had to, in my own mind, come up with it on my own.
Right.
In order to embrace it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah. It's fucking great. I mean, I'm sorry. You're just a Buddhist, Anthony. There's just
of all the religions, like that's the one that I'm like, okay. Like I wouldn't have any, I'm not interested that much in like the getting into the nuts and bolts, but it would be if I had to pick one.
You'd like Chogyam Trungpa, man. He's great. Like one of the things he says, he's like, I don't know if the correct term for him is apostate, but he's a Tibetan reincarnated lama who came to the United States. He loved to drink. He loved having sex. And like, he was like wild, but his books are really, really hardcore because what it's a very surgical to, in like cutting away delusion. It's like, let's just figure out what the truth is. And so like, one of the things he says is, you know, people will be like, oh God, Such a beautiful, so beautiful, I can't even describe it. I don't even have words for it. And what Trungpa says is like, well, then basically what you've done is you've taken your confusion, what he said, your insanity, and you've put it on an altar, and now you're burning candles to it. That's what you're doing there. Because you can't say something, therefore it's mystical.
Mm-hmm.
No. Like, get deep down into what it actually is. Really go deep into the thing itself. And so I don't want you to change at all. Whatever you're doing is working. You're making beautiful art and you're sending out in the world. I don't know, fuck it up at all. But the only reason I would say like, oh, some of this stuff is useful is because it can add to that. You know, when you run into some kind of like ancient 5,000-year-old delusion annihilating philosophy that's based on coming into contact with the truth, how could that hurt comedy?
No, I'm not afraid it would ever hurt comedy. I just think that's not how I would get to. We might end up agreeing 100% and having the same. And I think we share some similar philosophies. I would be more suited in reading a novel about where the characters go through these situations and like come to this than I would be by reading a philosopher's book or like a book on the religion itself.
Yeah.
Like it's just the way that I've got to process it myself. And I just get bored if I tried to read it, you know. But if you're like, read this novel, I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Anthony, I'm just curious, what's your plan for the rest of the day? What are you doing now? Like, after this podcast, what are you going to do when you're in town? Like,
I don't know. I might go back. I might go home and go to the pool a little bit. Like, this is my week off, so it's like, try to be as healthy as you can before you go back. But I've got errands to run. And right now, there's a handyman in my loft right now installing a punching bag.
No shit. You box?
Yeah, I got into it. Yeah, in the past, like, year, I got a trainer who's like a female MMA fighter. And she's been teaching me how to box.
She comes to your house?
I go to like a gym that she works out at.
My friend told me they call it the sweet science. You ever heard that before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so how deep are you in your combos? Like, you've gotten deep. That's a year. So you've gone full muscle memory, right?
I'm still like, we're still working on punches and like, it's a lot of balance. You know what I mean? Of like, I punch people like I'm trying to knock them out in a comic book. You know what I mean? It's like I wouldn't, I do it as exercise, but yeah. I understand the sweet science part of like breaking it down and the timing of everything. Fine. Like, I understand why it appeals to comics so much. Plus you get to hit things.
You get to hit things, man. And also you probably walk around with a little more of a sense of like, if some shit happened, I could probably defend myself, right?
There's a little more confidence, but it's probably, I'm sure it's like misplaced confidence. Like, you know, you go see Jason Bourne, you go see like the one of the Bourne Identity, and you walk out, and I want to feel like I'm Jason Bourne. Like, I'm walking through the lobby of a movie theater. Yeah, like, yeah. That's when I feel like I'm at my most dangerous.
Yeah.
That boxing kind of gives you that feeling.
And you know, the thing is, it's true though, man. One of the most terrifying things Rogan has introduced me to is like, you know, because he like people come to special forces people come to like real special forces people come to his show.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's really terrifying is you would just never know. They're so calm. They're so peaceful.
That's almost how you know. You know what I mean? Right. If there's two guys are in like about to get in a fight in a bar and one guy's just standing there waiting for it, like that guy's going to win the fight. And the other guy's yelling and running around screaming like, and how many people know how to fight? Like, you talk about special forces people, like hanging out with my trainer and like her friends are all fighters and all they do all day long is fight. Like, that's all they do. They're like, imagine swinging at somebody like that in a bar. You know what I mean? I work out 3 days a week, you know what I mean? Hitting mitts and shit. Like, I'm it's nothing. It's exercise. But these people who like make fighting their lives, you would never know.
You'd never know. Unless it's like Conor McGregor or something who's on a rampage right now.
Or it's like you see cauliflower ear and you're like, okay, this guy, don't fuck with this guy.
Stay away.
You know?
Yeah. Beware. Yeah, man. Shit. Anthony, this has been such a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for this interview. I really appreciate it. You're on tour. What? Will you let everybody know where you're headed?
AnthonyJeselnik.com. I'm on tour all year, all over the world. So check out tour dates. They're being updated all the time. I think it's through June right now, and cool. Then I'll have more.
Great. Thanks so much, man. Thanks, Hare Krishna. Man. Thank you. That was Anthony Jeselnik, everybody. If he's coming near you, definitely go see one of his live shows. Check out his specials. He's amazing. Much thanks to Squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. And much thanks to those of you who have subscribed to us over at patreon.com/DTFH. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon. Hare Krishna.